It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 21st edition of Wayne's Comics. Thanks for listening. This week, I get to talk with Michael Alan Nelson, who's one of the people behind Malignant Man from Boom Studios, one of my favorite comics that's out right now. I get to talk with him about other comics that he's created for Boom as well, and we have a good discussion. I think you'll enjoy it. Also, this is the first episode in which Gianluca Glazer and Ian Cullen join me to discuss news and upcoming comics on a regular basis, so I think you'll like that too. Also, I'll take a peek into the local comic store, and I'll talk about the books that I thought were really good this week, and the ones I didn't care for so much. So let's get to it.
I'm talking today with Michael Alan Nelson, who is one of the writers of Malignant Man, which is out from Boom Studios right now. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing really well. How about yourself?
Pretty good, pretty good. I thought we'd get started by asking how you got into comics. Were you a comics reader before you got into writing, or is this something that sort of happened afterwards?
It's something that really happened afterwards. I grew up in a very small town in Indiana in the middle of nowhere. I literally had cornfields in my backyard, so I didn't have access to any sort of comic shops or anything like that. When I was young, I had some of those old Power Records. I had one with Spider-Man and this Wolf Monster and Draco that I really, really loved. But other than that, I didn't have anything, and I couldn't go buy comics anywhere. And the local library that we had, it was a small public library. It had, I think, a couple of issues of ElfQuest, and then a graphic novelization of the movie Alien. But other than that, I didn't have any exposure to comics. And so all throughout grade school and high school, it wasn't until college when I actually started getting a little bit back into comics. My brother actually colored comics for Top Cow in the 90s, and so he started getting me back into it. And then what happened is I've always wanted to be a writer, so I wrote a novel called Dingo and published it online just because I wanted people to see what I could do as a writer. And it just so happened that Ross Ritchie read the story, really enjoyed it, and said, hey, I'm starting this company called Boom Studios, and I'm looking for writers. Have you ever thought about writing comics? And so I'm like, sure. So I wrote a short little 8-page zombie tale for him. He really liked it and has been asking me to write for him ever since.
Wow, how about that? If you're at the right place at the right time, sometimes it really works out.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, as with anything, I mean, I have volumes and volumes of writing that will never see the light of day because it is so horrible. But that's part of the process. I've always wanted to be a writer. I think the first thing that I ever really had published was when I was 6. I wrote something that ended up in the newspaper. Little cute crayon scribblings, that kind of thing. But it's something that I've always wanted to do. So when I went to college and went to school for English education, but even during that entire process, I was working on my creative writing skills and that sort of thing. So it's always been something that I've wanted to do. It's interesting how I fell into this particular medium.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about some of the stuff that at least I've read that I've really enjoyed. I think the first time I came across your writing was an Enigma Cipher.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I honestly, Boom Studios sometimes, as much as I love the product and I buy it real regular, like, sometimes it's hard to find individual issues. And the last issue of Enigma Cipher, I had to struggle to get. I had to drive to another state in order to pick it up. And I wanted to know what happened so badly. And I finally found it. And when I got it home, I couldn't wait to read it. And I really enjoyed that story. It's about a cipher that, if I remember correctly, Hitler had been using and was rediscovered, and people were trying to use it. And, of course, the government didn't stand for that. I liked the story very much.
Oh, thank you very much. That one was a lot of fun. When writing stories like that, there's a lot of research that goes into it, because obviously the Enigma cipher was something that was very real. And so having to study the people that cracked that code and the history behind it, it's really fascinating. So it's always fun to tell stories that are steeped in historical fact like that. But I'm really glad you enjoyed it. I can't believe you drove to another state. That's amazing.
Well, for Malignant Man number 3, I had some trouble finding that. And I didn't have to go to another state, but I did have to go to the other side of town to get it. Even though I ordered it, I'm really mad at my comic store that even though I ordered it, they specifically did not get it. And I was very unhappy with them, but I did get that. But there's a couple other books of yours that I liked. I liked Dead Run, which was great fun.
Oh, thank you.
Pale Horse was a lot of fun to read. And Dingo was one of my very favorites, about a guy with a huge wolf demon dog, and it was just a just a great story. How many guys have always kind of wished that they had a great big dog that would do the kinds of things that that dog could do?
Absolutely, absolutely. Honestly, Dingo is one of my favorites. Usually the people say, okay, what have you done? If there's one thing of yours that I should read, what is it? And it will usually be either Dingo or Hex. Dingo, like I said, it's the story that really started my writing career. What had happened is I wrote a novel called Dingo, and then not that long ago, Ross said, hey, you know that novel that you wrote? Let's make a graphic novel out of it. So that's actually how Dingo came about. So it's a story that I absolutely love. The dog, Cerberus, it was just so much fun writing that character. I think that the dog really is everyone's favorite character from that story.
People like him more than the guy.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. You mentioned Hexed, which I also enjoyed. I thought that was kind of fun, much more into the witch supernatural type thing, which I liked.
Yeah, again, like I said, Dingo and Hexed are my two favorites, are the closest to my heart and that I'm most proud of. Hexed actually began in Fall of Cthulhu, believe it or not. What had happened was I created this character, Lucifer, for the Fall of Cthulhu series, and we all just loved her so much, we thought, well, what if we actually pull her out of the Lovecraftian universe and put her in my own universe? And so that's what we ended up doing, and that's how the Hexed one-shot came out. So very, very happy with that as well. And, of course, the art, Emma Rios, did such an amazing job. She and Chris Peters, who did the coloring, those two ladies just did such an amazing job on that book. It's just so much fun to look at. It just really is beautiful.
Well, you've already answered a question I was about to ask you next. How do you pronounce that word? It's Cthulhu?
Yes, Cthulhu. What's interesting for readers that may not be familiar with Cthulhu, that's the way I pronounce it. There are actually other people that pronounce it differently. You can pronounce it Cthulhu, Cthulhu. And what's interesting is technically everyone is correct or everyone is incorrect. The idea that there's this dark elder god by the name of Cthulhu that is so beyond human understanding that it's actually physically impossible for humans to actually reproduce the sound of his name. So Cthulhu, poo, whatever we say, technically isn't correct because it's impossible for us to say it.
The terrible thing was when I off the comics and I go into the store and I said, do you have a what's the name of that book? How do you pronounce that? So I always get a kick out of the people who are looking at me and, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it's C-T-H-U-L-H-U. Oh, it's Cthulhu. And then they mangle it all up. And I'm like, okay, nobody really knows how to pronounce this word.
Yeah, it's one of those strange names. It's interesting that that's the one that of the one creature from Lovecraft's mythos that became popular because there are others that are really much easier to pronounce.
Well, there's another course comic that it's important to know that you've written. That was 28 Days Later, a very popular book, and it's kind of hard to track those issues down, too. But that's good because people are actually buying the comics, and that's really good about that. You want to talk a little bit about 28 Days Later?
Yeah. It actually just wrapped up. The 24th and final issue just came out last week. I'm really proud of the series. We actually got to tell the story that we set out to tell. So it wasn't cut short. It wasn't truncated. It actually ran the full length that we wanted it to. For people that are listening, if you've seen the film 28 Days Later, what the comic book series does is it continues the story of the character Selena from that film, and it tells her story after the events of that film, but before the events of the second film. There's a sequel made 28 weeks later. And the comic series that I wrote sort of bridges the gap between the two movies, and it's her story about how she has to go back into London. And everything that I write has to be approved by the folks that made the film. DNA is involved, and so it's all considered canon. It's all above board. Nothing weird like aliens or anything crazy like that coming down. So, yeah, she has to go back into England and make her way to London, and it's about the adventure and the journey that she goes on to get there and all the horrific things that happen to her, and, of course, the reason why she needs to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a very successful series. Any more plans for 28 Days Later coming on, or is that the end of it?
I think that's the end of it. I know that we set out to tell the story for 2 years. We had 24 issues slated. I know that the license ran out after 2 years, so we knew, okay, we had this length of time to tell the story. And the thing is, too, Selena's story, we told her story. Like I said, we told the story that we set out to tell. So if there is a chance to do more, probably won't be with Selena. But as far as I'm aware of, there aren't any plans to do any more in that universe. I'm not saying that we couldn't, But as of right now, because there's so many moving parts, you know, anytime you deal with a licensed project, there are numerous factors other than just wanting to tell a story that go into it. But as far as I know, no, there aren't any plans right now. But hopefully if there are, they'll ask me to write it. So we'll see. Fingers crossed.
Cool. Well, just ask anybody who has to deal with Star Trek to talk about that. The Star Trek people have this jump from book company to book company over the decades, and nobody seems to be able to hold it very long. So I'm sure they can understand that.
Yeah. You know, like I said, anytime you have a large license like this, it's sort of get in and get out. You know, it's like, because what can happen sometimes is if you, especially with a licensed property, you can sort of bury it into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if there's an element of that as well. And of course, there's been the rumor going around a while that there might be a 28 months later movie coming out. So I don't know if more comics that decision will rely on whether or not that film will be coming out eventually or not. So
cool.
Those are all things that happen above my pay grade.
Now, before we get into Malignant Man, one thing I wanted to ask is, all these stories would make great TV or movies. Are there any plans for Dingo or these other ones to move into a movie like in the box office?
You know, I would love that. I know that with Dingo and Hex, I think, personally, I think Hex would make a great television series, whereas Dingo might make a better film. Mm-hmm. And of course, I think it's every creator's dream to be able to take a comic property that they've written and have it adapted onto the screen in some way, shape, or form. I would love that to happen. But again, it's one of those things that's not up to me. It has to be the studio that reads it and goes, hey, that's kind of neat. Let's go ahead and make a movie about that. So I'm certainly amenable to the idea. So if there are any studio execs out there listening, if you're interested in, please contact me or contact Boom Studios. Honestly, I would love to see Dingo on the big screen. There's something about seeing him and Cerberus would be just a thrill of a lifetime. So hopefully someday.
CGI the way it is, the dog would be easy to make, I think. So that's not a problem.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, because, you know, one of the nice things about the comics medium is you're not limited by budget. So you can have anything you want happen. But when it comes to television and film, there are financial constraints. But fortunately, like you said, with CGI being what it is today, you can get away with a lot more for a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and I think that something like with Dingo, yeah, to do the dog, you can absolutely do it more inexpensively than you could have 10, 15 years ago.
And I think they can make it look realistic. If you've ever seen the British show Primeval, they have dinosaurs. And dinosaurs actually look pretty convincing to me.
Yeah, really, yeah, absolutely, I agree. It's funny you mention that because you look at that, you're like, oh, those look pretty good. And even compared to Jurassic Park, which was so cutting edge when it came out almost 20 years ago, it surpassed even that. And so I agree, yeah, I think it could look great.
Okay, let's move into your current project, at least one that's coming out now, and that's Malignant Man. And I have to say the name surprised me a little because it has sort of a superhero-sounding name, but Malignant is not something a superhero would want to call themselves, so it's kind of an interesting choice of words of that. Do you want to talk a little bit about the project and how it got started?
Yeah, of course. This is a project that was created by James Wan. For those of you who aren't familiar with the name, he is the director of the first Saw movie. He also directed the film that recently came out, Insidious, which, by the way, is brilliant. It's very, very good. Anyway, so this was his project, and he had a story and this idea of Malignant Man. And I don't want to give anything away, but the idea that there are these things called malignants that can bestow certain powers on people. So this was James' story, but because James is a director and works with film and television, he's not familiar with the comics medium. So usually what happens is when the publisher meets with someone and says, hey, we like this project, let's go ahead and make it a comic book, they need somebody to come in and do that for them, you know, somebody who knows the comics medium. And so that's where I come in. So what I do is take his treatment, I take his idea, and I'll sit down with him and we'll talk about what he wants to do with the story that he wants to tell, and now I'll go ahead and start scripting the story. And what's fun for me, it's playing in other people's universes. The same thing with like Lovecraft or 28 Days Later. It's sort of like, here's this world, and we need you to tell a story within that world. So even though James had a really good idea of what that story should be, it's getting that story across in the comics medium. So that's how I was involved, because a lot of the stuff that I've written in the past, I've done this before. I've done it with Blake Masters, with Insurrection. I did it with Walt Becker, with Kings of War. So this isn't the first time I've done it. And so I think what it is, they trust me to take a creator's vision and hold on to that vision while transferring it into the comics medium.
And not everybody could do that. Some people, the only backyard they can play in is their own. So it's great if you can do that.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And the thing is, I think that in this industry, because comics is becoming so immersed with Hollywood and television and film, that it also is just being a collaborative medium in and of itself, because you're working with artists and editors and that sort of thing, that you have to learn to play well with others, mm-hmm. and you have to learn to be able to tell stories that basically belong to other people. And don't get me wrong, I love telling my own stories. I think that's why like Dingo and Hext are so close to me and so are not my favorites. It's because they're mine. Those are all born from my own imagination. They weren't anybody else's ideas. They're all me. So, with that said, I always find it an interesting challenge to be able to tell somebody else's story. Mm-hmm. When somebody says, hey, okay, here are the puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll find a way to put it into a picture. And again, I've been doing it a long time, so I've had practice. Mm-hmm. And it does take practice, as with anything. But a lot of fun.
Well, the character that gets me the most in Malignant Man is Alan Gates, who's originally thought to be a cancer patient with a terminal diagnosis. What he goes through is just something. He's prepared to die, and then he discovers things aren't what they seem to be. And when we discover what it's like, it was a little repulsive to me, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. When I started to figure out what I wanted to do with the story, that opening scene came to me, and I really wanted to hit that note. I really wanted to start that series with that single image of Alan sitting by himself on a hospital bed with that caption that says, "Hell is in the waiting." My father died a couple years ago from complications due to cancer, and so I'm seeing him go through this stuff, and really... I mean, there's so much when it comes to cancer. It really is a loaded topic, but you see what people go through sometimes, and it's the not knowing. It's the not knowing, okay, did the chemo work? Did the chemo not work? Am I in remission? Am I cured? Am I not? There's something fundamentally horrifying with the idea of your body betraying you in some way. And then that's something that I wanted to really focus on in that opening sequence, where he thinks he's dying. And so how does that shape your worldview? I kind of like the idea of looking at the moment when he tries to stop the mugger from shooting the little girl. That sort of like gets him shot in the hospital and on this. I look at it sort of like a Lady in the Tiger moment, where it's sort of like, okay, well, if he was perfectly healthy, would he still have tried to stop the mugger? And of course, I like to think that yes, because he's a good guy. But in the back of my mind, it's like, well, would he have or not? And I think that's the fun of peeling back the layers of the story.
Well, one thing I particularly like about the book is that mutants tend to be, if you go to another company, they always tend to look okay. They don't get a third arm. They don't lose an arm. They don't do this kind of stuff. They always look good, and they actually look like young models and stuff like that, which always drives me nuts. This is a case where that's really not what's happening. And the fact that it seems to be something negative that's going on, and it still has a negative aspect to it when you find out what's really happening. But the thing I like about it is he's got the positives, but there also is this negative to it. And that's very different from what I see in other comics.
And I think that that's what makes this so interesting, is the fact that, yeah, you get all of these powers, but those powers come at a cost. For those of you that don't want spoilers, you may want to stop listening for the next 5 seconds. Basically, I mean, he has an alien parasite sucking on his brain. Just the image of that, it's just, it's creepy. Would you want something stuck inside your skull if it granted you certain abilities? Some of us may say yes, some of us may say hell no. But I like the idea of powers coming at a cost, because it makes it interesting, it makes it humanizing, and I think it also allows you to ask questions, well, would I or wouldn't I? And I think that's the whole point of telling the story. Yes, it's fun to have things blowing up and big action and fight scenes, but I also think there needs to be something else, something a little more subtle, something that gets the reader thinking. That's why I really like the idea of the Malignants, that it's not perfect. It's not like you just woke up one day and have superpowers. You weren't bitten by a radioactive spider and there you go. It's like, no, there's a downside to it too.
Well, that's what I like about it too. It makes him much more human of a character than I'm used to. So often they're two-dimensional. They've got this power and they look good. And basically, that's all we know about them. But he's actually got struggles going on, personal struggles that he's got to come through. And the powers compensate to a degree, but not completely. And another thing I like about him is that he's learning. There are other people who know and are able to use the powers a lot better than he does. But he's a quick learner, as we discover in issue 3. He's starting to do a lot more with it. And even the woman that's helping him is surprised by how quickly he can pick up and use the powers.
that's something, A, that shows a little bit about his character, that he's a smart guy and that he's totally coming to terms with what's happening to him. It's interesting because this is a 4-issue series, where as a writer, I would like to have that learning curve be spread out a little bit more, but because we only have 4 issues to work within, sometimes you kind of have to speed it up. So I think it makes sense to, A, have him become a quick learner because it says something about his character, but also it helps keep the story moving along.
Well, I enjoy the book very much, and I'm greatly looking forward to issue number 4. Are there any hints that you can give us that don't give away too much?
Well, I will say this. That all the conflicts will be resolved in issue 4. One way or the other.
Okay. That leaves the door open for a lot of possibilities, so that's good. I like that. Do you know what date it's supposed to be released?
And I don't. I would say probably around the 15th of next month.
Okay. Well, we'll keep our eyes open for it because I like it very much. Are there any other projects that you're working on that you'd like people to know about?
I know people hate it when creators always say this. They're like, oh, there is this project, but I can't talk about it. There is a project, but I can't talk about it. It's simply because it's sort of like in the beginning stages right now. But I will say this, it's going to be for Boom Studios, and it's going to be coming out this winter. It's going to be very, very big. If you read any Boom comics, you follow Boom in any way, shape, or form, you're going to know about it. So just keep an eye out for a new project that I'm doing for Boom. And I believe Solicits will hit in September. So I'll be able to talk about it specifically by then. But in the meantime, just know that there's one coming and it's going to be huge.
Okay, well, we'll look forward to that. Malignant Man number 4. Are they going to collect this in a trade, by the way?
Oh, I'm sure they will. Usually what happens is anytime they do a series that's done in single issues, they eventually collect it into a trade. So I figure the trade will probably be available at the end of this year, probably no later than spring of 2012.
Great. Well, I'll look forward to that. Do you think of any extra things in the trade or basically just be a collection of the book?
It'll be a collection of the book, but I'm sure there might be some of James's original notes and story ideas and concepts that they might put in it. And, of course, I'm sure there'll be some fun art sketches and things like that, you know, going through character development and character design. There's always some nice bonus material in the trade. So.
Great. Well, Malignant Man, the comic is called, and issue number 3 is out. If you're lucky, you'll find all the issues, which would be good. And if not, you can hang on until the trade. But I can't wait for issue number 4. I got to know how this resolves.
Well, thank you. I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised.
Oh, great. We're looking forward. Thanks again to Mike Allen Nelson for talking with us. And we look forward to reading more of your stuff in the future.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This is Mark Waid.
Hi, this is Amanda Tapping.
Hello, I'm Steve Pugh.
And you can catch them all right here on SFP Now.
Okay, now it's time to talk comic news with Gianluca Glaser and Ian M. Cullen from SFP Now. And Gianluca, why don't we start off with you? You've got some news that you'd like us to know about.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've talked to you, so there's been quite a lot of things going on. Green Lantern, the movie, I know you're a big fan of Green Lantern, Wayne, so I'm sorry to say that its first week it hit the low end of expectations. It made under $60 million, which studios were hoping for. And even though the next week is not finished as of this recording, it does not look like it's doing well. Bad word of mouth seems to have hurt it, and it's unfortunate that the critics have really been savage to this particular movie. Mm-hmm. What did you think about the movie, Wayne?
I love the movie. I don't understand what movie they were watching, to be frank. I went and saw it at the midnight show. Uh-huh. It was a pretty good crowd, and we all liked it. So everybody that I know goes to it and comes back and says, what were these people watching? And these are people who don't even particularly like Green Lantern come back and say, like, this is a movie I hope that when the DVD sales come out, we'll prop it back up again. I don't get what the reviews are, but that's just me.
Every review I read, or almost every review, they all kind of say similarly that DC's scraping the bottom of the barrel with this by picking this particular character, when it's further from the truth. It's like one of the most important characters right now going on in the DC universe.
Too true.
So it seems people come in with this preconceived notion that they're dealing with a C-lister superhero story, which is further from the truth.
Well, the one thing I hear from reviewers is that they've got superhero fatigue. We've gotten Thor, then we've got X-Men First Class, and now here we are with another superhero movie, which tells me that when Captain America the First Avenger comes out, don't expect good. If that's the real cause, I think there's something a little more devious at work. I think Cars 2 coming out from Disney on the second weekend, I think Disney determined to torpedo Green Lantern, so I couldn't compete with it. But what do I know? But anyway, I like the movie. I'd say it was, if you like Green Lantern, you're going to love the movie. So that's where I stand on that. Did you get to watch it, Ian?
No, but then again, I'm not really big on Green Lantern. I've not really embraced him the same as you have. I mean, I liked Emerald Knights, but I've seen the TV adverts for the movie and stuff like that, and the CG looks a bit dodgy. It looks like it's going to pull me out of the film.
Interesting. Okay, well.
Well, it had a $300 million budget.
That could be a trouble in the future. So, okay. Other stuff you've got?
Sad news this week. Gene Colan has passed away after being ill for several years. Very famous artist. He co-created Blade with Marv Wolfman. He's worked on characters such as Captain America, Doctor Strange, especially known for his work with Daredevil. He's worked with DC Comics on Batman, Detective Comics. And even as recently as 2009, he won an Eisner Award for Best Single Issue for work he did with Ed Brubaker for Captain America issue 601. Mm-hmm. So condolences to his family and to the comic community.
And his death has actually sent shockwaves through the comics community as well, as it would do with such a big name that here in the UK, we've got a yearly comics event. It kind of changes its name a little bit from year to year. I think it's reverted back. It used to be the British International Comics Con, and it's gone, you know, started as the Birmingham International Comics Con, but I'm not sure which banner they're flying it under this year, but it's actually the biggest comics event here in the UK. Well, it was before Kapow came around, which is another story. And this year they are dedicating a big portion of the event to Gene Colan, and they're asking that fans of his work and also other contributors to comics that have either worked with him or have memories of actually having met him go along to the event here in the UK and help celebrate his life.
I never met him, but I loved his art style. It's very dynamic. I remember him on Iron Man particularly, which didn't really fit. I thought, you know, putting Gene Colan on Iron Man was kind of crazy. But he made it work. He's very dynamic. There's a lot of action-oriented poses and stuff, very much of the Marvel style. So I'm going to miss Gene Colan. I'm really sorry he passed. But he's not the only death, Gianluca, I understand.
No, he's not the only death. His death, very, very meaningful. The words can't describe it. I can't do justice. But this next death, to me, doesn't mean hardly anything at all. And that is the death of Spider-Man in Ultimate Spider-Man issue 160. So the news broke on that pretty much the day before the release of the comic that Spider-Man was going to die. And it's a marketing ploy. We've seen it quite often. We've killed off a member of the Fantastic Four. We've killed Captain America. We've killed Robin, the second one. There's not much to it other than the fact that, as you've mentioned before on another podcast for SFP, that it's very similar to the death of Superman. Pretty much, even down to the packaging of the comic, which includes a black bag with the red logo.
Well, at least they didn't king him off the Marvel way, and that was just sort of like give him tonsillitis and drag it out over 12 issues.
I got a bad hair that killed him.
Yes. So he's dead for now.
I expect sales to do very well. There was a lot of coverage in the media. There was coverage in the New York Times, Los Angeles Times, story of it. So I expect it's going to sell well, but I'm such a cynic, I guess. I've gotten to the place now where when someone dies, I say, well, how long before he's back? So it doesn't really mean that much to me.
I'd actually be quite interested to hear what one of our writers at Sci-Fi Pulse thinks about it. He writes a comics column called This Week in Spandex, and he's very much into Marvel comics. So I'd be very interested to hear what his take is on it.
He'll review it.
So what got bigger coverage, this or Wonder Woman changing her outfit?
I think Wonder Woman changing her outfit.
Rogers Dying got a lot bigger coverage because that was something perceived as daring and different. This is much more now becoming less so. Doing this like every year. I mean, we just had the Johnny Storm died towards the end of last year. Now here we are halfway through the following year and we've got another Marvel death of a character. Every time you go to the well, it takes some of the water out. And I'm afraid that's what's happening with this.
Well, talking of Wonder Woman, there was actually an interesting story which ran earlier in the week. It'd be about 10 days old by the time this airs. But there's actually talk again of a Wonder Woman movie. And the guy, I can't remember his name, I'm looking the story up now, but the guy that's hoping to do it is the director who is currently attached to Logan's Run for Warner Brothers. Hmm. And he's got this bee in his bonnet about wanting to make a Wonder Woman movie for Warner. He's called Nicholas Winding Refn.
Hmm. He wants an actress from Mad Men, right, for the role? I think I read a similar story.
I'm not sure who he's chasing for the role, but it's just interesting how after the death of the series, this talk about doing a movie has pretty much come right back full circle again.
Well, Wonder Woman's a classic character, so I'm not terribly surprised. I think that one way or another, they're going to make her happen. Okay, Gianluca, you've got other news.
Yes, other news. Right now we're in June 25th, and during this time, up until a week later, is the American Library Association going on in New Orleans. This is very important for publishers because you're hitting a certain mass market audience, which is libraries, which are growing and growing and picking up comics. Next to the BEA, the Book Expo America, this is a very important conference for comic publishers getting their product out there to people in mass market field because you can't survive in the direct market alone. You see the numbers every month. I talk about them and they're down with comic sales, especially going down. You have to find like other avenues of selling your books. So American Library Association, a lot of stuff going out there, probably some big announcements before the week is over and some catalogs of upcoming releases being out in the news, basically. But that's a big thing right now for a lot of publishers. I know Arkea is down there right now, and I'm reading on like Facebook that their marketing guy, Mel, is just having a blast eating all sorts of wonderful New Orleans flavored food. Gumbo, jambalaya, gosh, mouthwatering. moving along, though, convention season is hot right now. San Diego Comic-Con's coming up. Back when San Diego tickets went on sale months ago, tickets sold out immediately within the day. It took like three attempts for them to even sell the tickets because the servers kept crashing. So they went with a company called Ticket Leap. Well, up until this point, you had a deadline to say whether or not you were going to go, and if you weren't going to go, you return your ticket. There were 1,500 tickets that were returned at the deadline for a refund. So San Diego Comic-Con put these tickets back on sale this week. Well, good luck trying to get them, because the moment they went back on sale, they sold out again. So that's how strong, even though studios are backing away from San Diego a bit, this year, it's still just as strong as ever. There's still thousands and thousands of people who are still dying to get tickets, doing whatever. I'm sure if you go on Craigslist, you can find some crazy offers for tickets.
Sure. I found it a bit weird how they didn't seem to be a great deal of coverage of the TV networks at Comic-Con last year in comparison to what it was like in 2009. 2009, when they did 2009 Comic-Con, a lot of the video coverage of panels and stuff, man, it was wall to wall. There was absolutely loads of it. And there didn't seem to be that much last year.
I don't know. It's tough to say because Comic-Con, it still doesn't know what it wants to be when it grows up. Is it a media event? Is it a comics event? Is it both? If so, how are they going to balance it? They've got troubles with how many people try to squeeze in the buildings. Comic-Con, I don't know what they're going to do. I've read some stuff that's not going to be there. Some of the shows are not going to be represented that were there last year, but I don't know. It's tough to say what Comic-Con's going to do.
I really was surprised when they re-signed with San Diego last year for a few more years because as much as I love San Diego, I love the convention center, the staff, the workers, security, everybody's wonderful. But the fact remains is that it's not big enough. The demand is not big enough. Now even the parking, which has to be reserved months in advance, it's just not enough. And maybe that's why the reporters didn't come, because maybe the reporters didn't feel like trekking half a mile away from where they could set up and come to the convention center. It's really gotten crazy over I know over 6 years' time, I've just seen it just ramp up and ramp up and ramp up, where tickets would sell out. First, tickets didn't sell out. Then you had tickets that sold out a couple months before the show. Then tickets sell out at the beginning of the year after the tickets have been on sale for a number of months. And then now you can't even sell the tickets in 2 days. They sell out in one. So it's just insane.
Well, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do, because eventually, if they're not careful, it'll get a bad name and people will stop going and then they'll wonder what happened.
Yeah. Well, hopefully. I mean, that way I can actually go. Well, I'm going anyway, but it makes it a little bit easier for me. You know, I don't like large crowds.
I'll see you there because I'm going.
Oh, speaking of Comic-Con, I didn't mention this to you guys earlier, but I'm going to be helping out Benaroya Publishing. It's a company that already has a couple of books out now. They, through Image Comics, have released Red Spike issues 1 and 2 and Samurai's Blood, which came out recently also. So they're going to be having their writers and artists over at the Image booth table, as well as Sam Sakar with his Image comic, The Vault, which I highly encourage everybody to just bother their retailer and make sure that they carry it. But I'm going to be coordinating interviews and press and stuff like that for these guys at the show.
Cool. Ian, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that it's going to be kind of funny. Both you and John Luker at San Diego Comic Con. That's like 3/4 of the staff of SFP now. And
yes.
Sure.
Maybe we could do a show there.
You know, I'm going to take
Irish people.
You'll never know what we'll get.
I definitely know a few people you can talk to over at the Image booth.
Okay, that'll work. We'll do some of that.
We could just do a magic mystery store, Wayne's Comics.
Yeah. That's what we'll do. Any more news?
Disney's launched a Disney Comics app. It's just not so wow, awesome news, but it does tell you what's going on with comics and publishers. You know, digital comics are the thing. And now it's not just getting your stuff on iTunes, it's having your own app, or not just being on Comixology, it's having your own private app for people to buy comics. Boom did it recently, Dark Horse has theirs, so Disney has jumped into the fold, and I'm sure a lot of other people will too. And then finally, one last piece of news. Bud Plant, a longtime fixture at convention shows, Bud Plant's comic arts. He's retiring. He's been in the business for a number of years, several years. Great guy. Great selection of stuff, too. He gets a lot of the rare stuff, not stuff that you can get anywhere else. But he's selling his business for whoever wants to take that on. And hopefully somebody does continue it. Because, like I said, I used to just love seeing it at shows. And I would hate for it to disappear. It would leave a big space where it used to be.
Well, I want to talk about one other death, too. Lou Schwartz passed. And he was one of the ghost artists for Bob Kane and Batman back in the day. He was 84, and I was really sorry to hear of his passing. The bad news about his art, you can never tell what he did because it's got Bob Kane's signature on everything. He was a ghost artist.
Wow.
So he passed recently. They do sell some of his artwork, which is nice. And I have you seen, you can clearly tell that, yeah, he influenced a lot of the Batman back in the 40s and the 50s and probably the early 60s as well. So they seem to go in threes, and I'm really sorry to hear all the deaths, except for Ultimate Spider-Man. He can, I don't care about that.
Yeah, really, stay dead, Ultimate Spider-Man.
Oh, we'll do that Doctor Who Spider-Man crossover we were talking about on the other show.
That's right. That's what we'll do. Well, why don't we talk about one other piece of news that Ian, you wrote about. You talked about the Lock and Key pilot was going to be shown at Comic-Con.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's going to be shown on the Friday night at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. Someone pick it up?
I don't know if they can sell it. I think we'll just have to watch it.
No, they're showing the pilot, which Fox...
Which rejected, yeah.
And they're having a special screening of it at Comic-Con on Friday night, I think.
I'll
so if you really want to see that, they can get to see it.
Have you guys ever read the comic?
I have not, no.
Okay, I happen to read it. I like it. It's very weird. I can understand why it's probably, you're going to have to do a lot of special effects. I mean, you put a key in the back of somebody's head and their head pops open and you can see all their memories inside. Mm. I just looked at it going like, wow, our CGI right there, that's going to cost a little bit. But I like the books, so the books are really well written. I think not only is the art really interesting, but the story's good too. So I'm sorry that didn't fly.
I can see you trying to get to see that.
But believe me, it's one of the things I have on my list that I want
to
see.
I don't know how Comic-Con works. I mean, John, you've been to it a few times. Is it in the ticket price that you can get in to see these things?
No, you get your day badges, basically. And there's 4 day badges, which I was able to snatch up on the day that it went on sale and sold out. And then you have your individual days that you can buy too, which are cheaper. A 4 day badge is $110. And then your other days are between $35 and $45, depending on what day. And all the individuals and the four-day passes all sold out the same day. But once you're inside, you don't need to buy anything else to go to a panel or to go to Exhibit Hall H, where they do all the movie stuff. You do have to wait in line to get into Exhibit Hall H, though. It's on the far west, or I guess south side of the convention center, and you have to go through a line to get in there. And then once you're in there, it's humongous, but even still, it's a huge wait to get in. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you don't have to pay for anything else. You have to pay for food. You got to make sure you can get a hotel room. And you have to, if you're not parking at the hotel, you hopefully find a place that you can park. Not to pay for that.
Sometimes I understand you have to stay in the room several hours, get there before your thing comes, just so you're there when your project you want to see turns up.
Oh, absolutely. You have to do that, because I remember waiting 30 minutes to get in, but I've heard stories, and that was a number of years ago, I've heard stories where it's just hours, they've set up tents for shade for people and stuff like that. And then when you're there in the exhibit hall, it's interesting, you can wait there as long as you want, because they're always cycling in and out different movies, but someone will hand you a ticket. And when you're done, when you eventually do want to leave, you go to a particular room and you get something like, I got a Ghost Rider hat several years ago, back when I had the time to waste to do that kind of thing. Because everyone wants me to work. Everyone wants me to promote their stuff. So now I can't go to the panels.
Somebody obviously confused you with Nicolas Cage, then.
Right. But no, it's fun.
Well, why don't we go on into, if you have some stuff that you want to talk about, what's coming? Do you want to cover some of that?
Upcoming comics?
Yeah.
I looked at next week's stuff, and there really wasn't anything that wowed me. I know in terms of like the preview stuff, there's some really good items. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is coming back through IDW. The Vault comic book, which is really awesome, and you can go online at facebook.com/TheVaultComic. That's coming out a month from now. There's a lot of interesting stuff. I'm still waiting for the Parker. IDW's collecting the two Parker books, doing a Martini edition. Ooh. I'm looking forward to that. At San Diego, I'm picking up the exclusive version of the Dave Stevens sketchbook. You can get the regular version around the same time, but
okay.
I'm grabbing that. Other upcoming stuff that just is on my radar. Nothing in particular other than those.
Okay.
What about you, Wayne?
You mentioned some of the stuff that I'm interested in. Other things that are coming that I'm looking forward to is we're going to see the end of several of the DC Comics series.
I hope those new DC relaunches don't suck.
Well, a lot of everybody I talked to says that they expect that it's going to do well the first month. The second month's going to be interesting. And then 6 months into it, what's still going to be going? That's the up and coming. One of my friends and one of the guys in the previous podcast said that Hawk and Dove done by Rob Liefeld. Not a lot of hope for that one, but other ones I think will do well.
Well, the ones that I'm really, really interested in, these are probably the ones that I'm going to go with. I'm definitely going to drop Action now because I'm not really a big Superman fan. I was really just interested in it for the next Luthor storyline. So what I'm going to go with when they come out, I'm adamant on these ones now, is Paul Cornell's Stormwatch, Paul Cornell's Demon Knights, Green Arrow, which I think is going to be done by, is still going to be done by, is it Paul Dini that's doing Green Arrow?
No, it's not J.T. Crow. I think it's Dan Jurgens is going to do Green Arrow.
I'm going to do Green Arrow because I want to jump on with that. But I'm going to drop Batman and Robin, and I'm going to go with Detective Comics because I've been reading a little bit about it, and they've got this Jack the Ripper type murderer sort of character in the first issue. And I'm kind of liking that theme because it's kind of like in the same tone as the Batman that I actually like, the darker, more brooding Batman, and also Detective Comics is Batman on his own as well. So
I'm actually picking up Batman because the team on Detective Comics now, well, at least Scott Snyder, who's working on Detective Comics now, he's moving over to Batman. So I'm actually looking forward to that for that reason.
Well, I always like to call Tony Daniels, too. I think he does a nice Batman, so I don't have any worries about the Bat books to start. I worry about them 6 months down the road, though.
But I've actually heard some good news. I'm not sure whether this has been confirmed yet, but I was on another podcast, an iPodcast, the other night, and talking about comics and stuff like that. And apparently the Batman Beyond comic book is probably likely to continue, but will likely revert back to issue one sometime next year. But it's looking like it'll hopefully continue.
I like the book, but I don't want to go back and renumber number one on everything. We already had number one within the last year.
I complained about it before, but I'll say it again. I understand why they're releasing 52 first-issue comics in 1 month. I think it's a big enough event. You could have spread it out over 2 or 3 months, and you could have gotten bigger sales, maybe better sales long-term-wise than if you were just to bat out all these number ones and then make retailers cannibalize the kind of orders that they would normally do if there was less number ones per month to pick from.
See, I think they want a big event, and September is going to be the big event, and they're going to try to make that last as long as they can.
I know. You could do a 3 month event, though.
Yep.
That's just it.
Okay, and on that note, that's the news for this week.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
Now let's look at this week's comics. Several DC comics are going by the wayside, and it still makes me sad to see them go, particularly Zatanna, number 14, came out. I'm going to miss that book. Paul Dini's had a lot of fun with Zatanna the Magician, and I'm going to miss his stories every month. Also, Batman and the Outsiders concluded. I'm not going to miss that one quite so much. I don't know if the Outsiders ever really took hold this time around. A great book that's out is Batman Gates of Gotham, number 2 of 5. We get to see just who or what the Gates of Gotham are this time, and that's a very good book. I'm really enjoying it. Of course, the Flashpoint comics are always high quality. You've got wonderful things like Kid Flash Lost, Lois Lane and the Resistance, The Outsider, and The Reverse Flash, which is particularly good. I like that one a lot. Green Arrow number 13 has a fill-in writer and story, so it's good. I liked it. I'm looking forward to see what they do when the new book comes out. Justice League of America continues with the Eclipso story. Superman 712 is Kurt Busiek writing Superman again. That's always a good thing. He's got Krypto in the spotlight this time, and I always like Krypto, so it's a good little story, I think. Young Justice number 5, based on the cartoon series on Cartoon Network, is out. That's a good book. I like it. When we get to IDW Publishing, though, the book of the week is there. It's Rocketeer Adventures number 2 of 4. That book is just sailing and soaring, just like the Rocketeer does with his jetpack. If you're not reading that book, you really ought to be. It's a wonderful comic. Then we get to Marvel. We've got Mystery Men number 2, which is growing on me. I kind of like that book. Pulp heroes have a way of attaching themselves to me, and I guess I'm just liking that comic a lot. Iron Man 2.0 number 6, having to do with Fear Itself, is out. Other comics that are out from Boom Studios are Planet of the Apes number 3, which is really good. That's a good book. And Stan Lee the Traveler, which is always a good book. Boom Studios does have a lot of quality products, so I'm really happy with that. And the book that I didn't enjoy so much this week is The Last Phantom, which really ought to have ended. I like Scott Beatty's writing, and he normally does a good job, but I just feel that this story should have ended several issues back. I like the Phantom when he's in the jungle, and what they're doing right now just doesn't interest me all that much. So no more Last Phantom for me, I think. And those are the comics that came out this week. Check out what's in your local comic shop. I'm going to pretty much go in alpha order this time rather than group them by items. So, you know, be careful if you're looking for something specific. Listen for that. If you need more t-shirts, boy, there's always plenty of those. There's 1,000 steampunk creations for about $24.95. There's a lot of steampunk people out there who enjoy all these good things. So that's for you. There's an Angela statue, which you'd better like. It's $219. There are a bunch of action figures called Batman Legacy Wave 1. There's a Golden Age Joker, a Modern Age Batman, a Silver Age Mr. Freeze, and those are interesting action figures. I always like Batman, so I'll have to look into those pretty well. There's a Blackest Night Green Lantern t-shirt by Ivan Rice. There's Captain America Hero Flex Fit Caps. And there's a Hydra one, so if you want to play the good guy or the bad guy, you get to do that. There's a DC Universe t-shirt with Batman. There's another one with Green Lantern. There's another one with Superman. So there's all kinds of good DC stuff out with this week. There's a Disney Showcase Astronaut Mickey figure. And there's a Band Leader Mickey figure. And then there's also the Carpenter Mickey 5 figurine, Cowboy Mickey 5 figurine, Domino Mickey 1 figurine, Fireman Mickey number 4, Pirate Mickey number 7, Sailor Mickey number 0, Tailor Mickey number 6, Top Hat Mickey number 9. Boy, you're going to want to get all those if you're a Disney person. Of course, the Whovians this week have the 11th Doctor 12-piece action figure Assistant Wave 01, which is offered again. There are BBC radio episodes. The audio CD set is out. There are t-shirts, of course. There's Captain Jack. And he comes in all different sizes, and I don't want to talk any more about that. There's also an audio CD of Genesis of the Daleks. There is a mug with Matt Smith and A.B. Pond on it. There's also the Awakening DVD and the Gunfighters DVD. So this is a Whovian week for sure. There are Duke Nukem 7-inch action figures. There's Ghostbusters mini plush and plush figures. G.I. Joe fans can get Snake Eyes prop replica of the katana. There's also a Storm Shadow prop replica of their katana. I still think the Green Lantern movie was really good, and so there are t-shirts to get. There's the movie logo on there. There's also a glow-in-the-dark t-shirt with the movie symbol on it. There's also a Symbol 4 and a Symbol 5 t-shirts. There's also women's t-shirts with the symbol on them, and youth ones, too. So let's hope that some of the Green Lantern fans, if the movie's not doing so well, at least we can support it by buying the materials that they make. There's a Justice League logo t-shirt. There's a Marvel Captain America trading card box set. There's also Captain America skateboard key ring, a HeroClix Captain America, a Hulk skateboard key ring, an Iron Man skateboard keyring, and a Spider-Man skateboard keyring. And Thor, he's in there too, by the way. I wonder what you use a skateboard keyring for. Somebody's got to tell me that. There are also DVDs and Blu-rays for Robot Chicken Star Wars 3. There's a Serenity Wallscape for about $50. Hoodies are out for Sinestro Corps, which are offered again. Then we get the hoodie with the Connor Kent symbol on it for Superman, which is sort of reminiscent of Superman Earth 1. Star Wars has a Hammerhead mini bust and a Chewbacca Super Deluxe 24-inch talking plush figure for a whopping $100. Woohoo! Better like that. There's a Jessica Rabbit teeny weeny mini maquette. It's hard to think of anything small on her, but the price is even large. It's $125 for a teeny weeny maquette. Ooh, you better like her. There's also a Wonder Woman Distressed logo t-shirt that's in the color red. And of course, we've got to end on a zombie note. There's a Zombie High Yearbook 64 hardcover. Oh, that's got to be in there to complete your zombie collection. And those are the wonderful things in your comic store this week. And that's a wrap for this edition of Wayne's Comics. Thanks again to Michael Allen Nelson, Gianluca Glazier, and Ian Cullen for joining me on this episode. We'll have other great guests in the upcoming weeks, so be sure to listen in. And of course, as always, if you like what we're doing here on Wayne's Comics and also on SFP Now, you can participate by helping to defray our costs by donating money through PayPal on both the scifipulse.net website and the SFP-Now website. So please consider that if you enjoy what we're doing. And until next time, keep reading your comics.
And so I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.